Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of cardiac rehabilitation. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. But before I introduce my entire panel, I'd like for you to meet Dr. Cyrus Gwynn, a practicing internist and member of the medical staff of the Northern Virginia Cardiac Therapy Program.
Thank you, Stephanie. The problem that we're going to be talking about today is coronary heart disease. This is an illness brought on by narrowing of the coronary arteries, those vessels which supply the heart muscle with its life-giving oxygen. The program that we'll be talking about later seeks to deal with the symptoms or complications of this illness and talks about rehabilitation of patients who have coronary heart disease.
To elaborate on the subject, my other panelist is Jim Metcalf, Associate Professor of Health and Physical Education at George Mason, and an exercise physiologist for the Northern Virginia Cardiac Therapy Program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stephanie.
What are we talking about when we're saying cardiac rehabilitation? What does the term actually mean?
When we rehabilitate, we're talking about providing therapy for those who have fallen prey to heart disease. Our program offers a exercise therapy, educational background, and also monitoring of the patients while they're exercising.
Northern Virginia Cardiac Therapy, who actually started it? How did it begin?
The program began in about 1975 when four people got together and organized a program of rehabilitation, which was conducted right here at George Mason University. Everything was on a volunteer basis. From that, the program grew to what is now the Northern Virginia Cardiac Therapy Program.
Dr. Gwynn, how much does it take to get a person who is in your profession involved in a program like this? Everyone's busy in this day and age. How do we let physicians know the importance of getting involved in a community project like this?
Well, first of all, I think they have to be exposed to the information about the risk factors of coronary disease and the various ways in which you can modify it. And exercise therapy has certainly become one of the ways in which heart disease can be dealt with and, we believe, prevented. So it's really a process of education more than anything else.
Education, is the general public really educated to the fact of the risk of coronary disease and the actual prevention or possibly the lowering of those risk factors?
I think efforts have been made in that direction, Stephanie. Recently, the American Heart Association has launched educational campaigns, but still there is a lot to be transmitted to the public in terms of education. That's one of the things that we hope to do and have done as a part of this program, is to make information available to those who have fallen, as I said, victim to heart disease, as well as to the general public who are sedentary, perhaps asymptomatic, but may be predisposed towards heart disease because of lifestyles.
Yes, we can identify in the general population individuals that we've come to call coronary prone. These are people who have a very strong family history of heart disease or whose habits seem to promote the development of coronary artery disease. Such habits might include cigarette smoking and what we call a sedentary lifestyle, a lack of regular exercise. We also know that individuals who have high blood pressure or diabetes, or who have in their bloodstreams too much cholesterol, also may be coronary prone. And these individuals we try to identify because most of these risk factors can be modified by appropriate treatment.
There is the person, however, that has absolutely no symptoms of past familial coronary disease, or they do not have high blood pressure, they do not smoke, and yet there is still always that potential that they will not be missed, that they will become a victim of circumstance, per se. You never can predict these things, although you try to eliminate the risks down to the bare minimum. The person who says, it will never happen to me, how do you deal with that individual?
Well, I think it's important to point out that you never get the risk to zero. We're all human to start with, and so there's always some risk of coronary heart disease. We're simply trying to minimize that risk, at least not to raise it above a certain standard level.
Jim, in the program, how much involvement do you find is from the person who is under 45 years of age? Is coronary disease or the whole rehabilitation program oriented towards the individual that's, let's say, over 50?
No, I would say the mean age, although I don't know for sure, has to be in about the mid to high 40s. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Quinn?
Yeah, I think that's true.
And we have had patients ranging from their 20s up through 60 at least. But again, the mean age is about, I'd say, mid-40s. So we're talking about individuals who have been stricken about the prime of their professional lives and who have a great interest in returning to the mainstream, getting back into life vocationally, getting back into life in every aspect. And that's primarily the population that we serve.
So a person who's 35 years of age would not necessarily be exempt from having coronary
Certainly
disease.
Not. Certainly not.
What about females? There's always been the myth that the male is the person who goes out and who's the breadwinner. The female is the one who stays at home with the children. More and more you're finding that women are becoming corporate executives and are becoming more involved in the day-to-day processes of the ongoing world. Do you feel as though that will probably start to increase their risk in the future?
I think, in fact, we can see this already. Certainly in our rehabilitation program, we have primarily men. Men make up the majority of the patients. But there are also a number of women, and we see more and more women with coronary disease as the risk factors I spoke of become more prevalent in their population. Cigarette smoking, for instance, has become increasingly popular among women since, say, 1940. And the effects of that, I think, we may be seeing now.
Earlier, before we did the show, we were talking about the effects, the outreach element of the program. You mentioned something about employing students within the actual operation. Would you elaborate?
We have involved students in a number of ways, hoping to provide educational opportunities for the student. As a part of the program, one student is selected each semester to serve in the position of student fellow. This provides a small stipend for the student. The student must be enrolled at George Mason University, and most of our student fellows have been from the nursing department. Currently, our student fellow is a biology student and an undergraduate biology student, but we've had both graduate and undergraduate students. In addition to this, students from the graduate nursing program at Catholic University have come to observe and participate in our program as a learning experience as a part of their studies. I think this is one of the strong contributions that our program can make to the university by providing a practical opportunity for students to see what is being done in the area of preventive, what's a better word for that, Dr. Gwynn?
Prevention is
prevention
good.
And actually getting out and practicing the trade.
If we're talking about practicing the trade, I'm sure there have been some changes over the past 20 years. What is different now in terms of what the profession is believing in and doing in reference to cardiac rehabilitation that was not taking place 20 or 25 years ago?
Well, Stephanie, if you go back a bit further, say to 1900, if an individual had a heart attack, he was confined to bed for 1 or 2 months. And it took physicians a long time to learn that the treatment itself caused as much disability as the illness. And in about 1940, a physician in Boston, Dr. Sam Levine, began to get his patients up and sit them in a chair. And instead of having problems, he found that they actually recovered more quickly and had less symptoms and seemed to do better when they avoided the undesirable effects of going to bed for a long time. And I think the impact of exercise and cardiac rehabilitation is really an outgrowth of this philosophy.
But getting up and sitting in a chair is very different from doing active exercise.
Yes, but it's a whole lot better for you than lying in bed. As if you take, for instance, the person who has a heart attack, or as we say, a myocardial infarction, the first period of his recovery is spent in the hospital setting. And then after he leaves the hospital, he's given instructions in modest walking activity. And then at approximately 2 months, if his exercise tolerance permits, he becomes a candidate for a program like ours. And it's at this point that we really begin to work on rehabilitation from the standpoint of exercise, gradually increasing his level of activity under medical supervision so that he can safely resume a very active lifestyle, which he may not have enjoyed before his heart disease appeared.
How many people are actually involved in the program, and what type of people are we talking about professionally?
It's a very large program. It's probably one of the largest in the area, probably one of the largest in the state. A busy night will see us with 60 people or more exercising at the same time. The population is fairly characteristic of our area and characteristic of the disease itself, mostly males, mostly middle-aged males. I would say most of them are professionals in our group. A lot of them have high type A personalities, if you know what I mean. But we do have women in our program, and we're seeing an increasing number of women.
How are people referred to the program?
Three criteria are necessary. The first is referral by your own private physician. In other words, you must have your physician make the referral. It's not possible to enroll off the street. So that's the first criteria. The second is that you must have manifest heart disease. You must have either had a heart attack or have an abnormally high risk factor. It's a therapy program as opposed to a prevention program. And the third is you must submit to our medical staff a copy of a recent treadmill examination. If these three criteria are provided, then entry is possible.
For our listeners that are not familiar, could you explain what a treadmill examination is?
I'll defer to Dr. Gwynn for that question.
A treadmill examination is really an exercise tolerance test where an individual is usually exercised by having them walk on an endless belt while their EKG and heart rate response is monitored by the medical personnel. And this kind of study gives us an idea of how well the heart performs under stress conditions and gives us the ability to write for them sort of an exercise prescription, if you will, how much they can do and how hard they should do it.
Unfortunately, our time is up. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. Pat Ping has been our production coordinator. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.
Northern Virginia Cardiac Therapy Program is one example of George Mason University's effort to reach out and serve all members of the community at large.